This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. Hey everyone, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me for this special episode. So a while back, I was honored to moderate a masterclass on the occasion of A Man Called Otto's world premiere. The movie is now in theaters worldwide. It was a complete blast. First, I had a conversation with producers Fredrik Wikström Nicastro and Rita Wilson on bringing the US version of Otto to life, and then a unique meeting between Otto and Uwe themselves, Tom Hanks and Rolf Lassgård, on shaping their characters, process, and so much more. It was so many laughs, it was a blast. A Man Called Otto is based on the novel En man som heter Uwe by author Fredrik Backman and the Swedish film of the same name. A Man Called Otto is produced by SF Studios and Playtone and distributed by Sony. You can also watch this masterclass on SF Studios YouTube. I'll put the link up in the show notes if you want to go see that. This conversation was taped in front of a live audience in December 2022. First up, Rita Wilson and Fredrik Wikström Nicastro join me on stage. Rita, you're pretty much an industry onto yourself. Now, we know you as an actor, Sleepless in Seattle. You're a singer-songwriter. You have a wonderful song in Otto. But as a producer for movies like My Big Fat Greek Wedding and Mamma Mia, you have 1.5 billion gross box office for your movies. That's pretty good. So obviously, you know what resonates. But I learned something from you a few years ago. Your Greek background, and you were saying that there is no word for privacy in Greek, which is completely the opposite of Uwe and Otto and Sweden. And what resonated for you with that?
Well, first of all, I couldn't believe that. I did not believe that there was not a word for privacy in Greek. And I was asking friends, how do you say I need my privacy? And they would always look like, And they couldn't, there's a word for private property or that's private, don't go there. But there wasn't a word for privacy. There was things like, I need my space, things like that. And so I realized that's exactly how my childhood was. You know, there was never any privacy. Everybody was always on top of everybody. I'm a first generation American. My father was Bulgarian. My mother was Greek. And so I think culturally, I was very used to that sort of, let's call it loving involvement.
I know that one. But so what was it with Uwe? Like?
Oh, well, because in the Swedish film, which is what I saw first, and then I read the book, I thought, oh my gosh, this is a person who doesn't want to be bothered by anyone. He wants to be left alone. And I remember feeling that as a kid in a way, you know, can I just have my space? And yet his life is transformed because of these people that he encounters, these new neighbors that move into the neighborhood and make him open up a bit.
Fredrik, you're behind some of the biggest international successes that we have over here, Snabba Cash, Boy versus McEnroe, and En man som heter Uwe, of course. This book and this story, when you found it, it was kind of defying expectations the whole way. Talk a little bit about your journey with that.
I thought about this a long, because I've lived with this book in 10 years in different ways, that I think there are so many things, universal themes with this book that goes so deep that has made it into this big, big success, because the book has sold almost 10 million copies and it's huge in China right now, which is kind of crazy. And of course, in America, it's huge. I think it's something with the humanity of the story that is very universal, because there is this saying that you can't judge a book by its cover, or another saying that I love is that it's almost impossible to hate someone when you heard that person's story.
Right.
And I think Bachman's book incorporates that so beautifully, because you present this character and you look at him from the outside, and you have a certain, he's that kind of a character. And then you get to know him and you see another version of him. You see the real one. And he does the same journey with the neighbors. He sees this new family moving in or other people in the neighborhood. So while we as an audience see him in a new light, he also sees characters in the neighborhood in a new light. So I think the audience or the reader really incorporates that humanity. I also think there's something very powerful about hope. You know, this character has given up and he doesn't want to live and finds a new meaning in life about helping other people. And that comes to the third thing, which I think is very powerful, which is the theme we've discussed so much about unity, which mm-hmm. we feel strongly that the world needs more of that, which is that this character finds a new family basically across the street, people that were strangers. And that's something that we also, just from when we made the Swedish film, 2015, and now, I think the need for that message is much, much more important, both here in Europe and in America.
And how did this happen?
I just got lucky.
Yeah.
I got lucky, so it was...
But you happen. You like Swedish things, Mamma Mia.
Well, yeah, Sweden's been very good to me. I had seen the Swedish film. It came to me in a packet that the Academy sends to you, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, the Oscars, for your consideration. And I pulled out a film called A Man Called Uva. And you read a little synopsis and you say, this sounds interesting, right? So we pulled it out and we put it in the DVD player and we were watching it. And immediately I was taken by the humor, the depth, surprising where this story was going, and the amazing character of Uwe that Rolf created. And I was thinking to myself, oh my God, I got to get the rights to this movie. And I turned to Tom, who was next to me, and I said, we've got to get the rights to this movie and you have to play this character. And he said, the other day, he said his cynical self would not allow him to say exactly what that he was thinking. That, God, I'd love to play this character. This guy's really good, though. I don't know if I could top this. And I just like spoke it for him. So he didn't say no. And the next day we called to explore getting the rights to the film or who
and
had them.
And I got the call from Richard Lovett, who is the president of CAA, and said, yeah, I hear you're trying to put together an American version of A Man Called Uwe. Yeah, that's right. I have an actor here who's interested in playing in the movie. Yeah, who's that? Tom Hanks. All right, like that happens every day, like a normal phone call.
Exactly.
And then I was in town and we met the day after.
He was in LA.
And we hit it off. Yeah. And then we developed it together that was 5 years ago, more
that
or less.
That was. Yeah. 5 years from that meeting till when we started filming.
Exactly.
And it is a family. You and Tom have worked together as producers. You've worked together as actors, but not as producer actor. Did he have to audition? I mean,
no. And it makes it very easy to get a movie made when you have Tom as your star. So everybody should be so lucky to have him. He's been an amazing person to work with, and I know that. But you also don't know what the dynamic is going to be in that way, because you know we were producers and he was very, very easygoing, I have to say.
I can imagine. One of the things that you had to do with this was to really make an American version of this story. What were the challenges with that, Fredrik?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we didn't want to produce this in a way, if you look at Girl with the Dragon Tattoo or Let the Right One Win, Let the Right One In, which are best-selling novels and were Swedish books adaptations, that we just sold the rights and we weren't really involved. What our idea was to be actively involved, and actually our company SF also financed the film, so we were really in the driving seat all along. But we also knew that we wanted the film to have a very American tone. So that was why we loved the idea of partnering with Rita and Playtone, because having them to really help us to make sure we had that in and the adaptation.
Some of the challenges were that we don't have socialized medicine in the U.S. Yeah. So we had to come up with a way that we could make it believable that someone was trying to take Ruben and Anita's house from them. That was something that we had to create. It was challenging to find the neighborhood that is so described in the book and also in the movie. Those neighborhoods don't really exist in America. There's newer, very new versions of that, but there wasn't anything that was in that old-fashioned sort of neighborhood that could have been created in the 60s and 70s, and we got lucky with finding that in Pittsburgh.
What about the balancing of comedy and drama? There's some dark themes as well as comedy and suicide. How did it differ at all in the American version and the Swedish version?
Absolutely less so than what you would think.
Yeah,
actually.
Less so. Yeah. And so much of it was already in Frederick Backman's book. Mm. You know, so that was one of the things that was so compelling, is all of it was there, and it was more to stay out of the way as opposed to trying to make it into something new. And Dave McGee, our screenwriter, who wrote Finding Neverland and Life of Pi, I felt that he was a person who could get comedy and also get the poignancy and the pathos of a story. And his first draft that came in was next to perfect.
And he was amazing when he pitched himself, his vision for the script to us. He said, I know this character because Otto is my dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, okay, this guy is the right writer for this.
Yeah.
Rita, there is no color in the world without you is a lyric in the song that you have written for this movie, Till You're Home. Tell us a little bit about that lyric and why.
Thank you. That's great that you pointed that out. I love that story about that, because Otto says in the movie, oh, my world was very black and white. Sonia was the color. And I loved that idea that somebody's life could be transformed by another person, that they can bring to you your deficits that you have or that you need and complete you. And I was also inspired by a conversation that I had with a friend of mine that said, when my father died, and I was obviously very sad and grieving, he said, the conversation continues. And I couldn't really understand what he meant by it at that point, but as I got further and further away from my dad dying, and then of course my mom and other friends, that I understood that you do keep talking to the people that you love, even though they've passed on. And so we were trying, my co-writer David Hodges and myself, were trying to create a story about, oh, I can't wait to tell, you know, them this bit of my day when they come home. And so that was one of the lines in the song that was meaningful. But also very thankful to Mark Forster, our director, for asking me to write a song. Because as a songwriter, you know, you're jumping up and down. You're so excited. You're like, yes, I can't. I'd love to do this. But the producer of me is like, simmer down, lady. Because what if he doesn't like the song? And then I'm the producer and I've got to say, of course, we're not going to use that song. So I said to Mark, I will do this and I'm very honored to. But if anything happens and you don't like it, we have to be very honest about each other, because he asked me to write the song before we started filming, because he knew where he wanted to place the song and he wanted to use that during production. So thankfully he liked it. He told me later that he had asked somebody, a very well-known person, to write a song for one of his movies, and the person wrote the song and he didn't like the song at all and did not use the song and had to call up this person and tell them. And that did not go well. So I was like, I'm glad I didn't know it then. It would have been intimidating.
I don't know if Truman came out or if he's still, I just want to say.
He's here.
Yeah, he's here.
Somewhere out there.
Shout out to your son, Truman, who plays young Otto. He's amazing. I understand that acting was not something he wanted to do at all. How did this happen?
Well, this is again Mark Forster in his very kind and influential way. He said to us one day, "Oh, I hate it when you go to a movie and there's a younger person playing the older person, and they never look like that person." And he said, "It's too bad your other sons, who are both actors, are too old for the role." I said, "Yeah, I know, that's a shame." And I said, "It's too bad that Truman's not an actor, because he's the one that people say look the most like Tom." And he goes, "What? Let me see a picture." And I'm like, no, he's not an actor. "Well, let me just see him." So I show him a picture and he's like, "Oh my gosh, he looks like Tom in the 80s, you know?" So he said, "Well, what does he want to do?" And I said, "He wants to be a cinematographer," which he does. And he was already pursuing that after university. So Mark said, "Well, let me just go meet with him. I mean, we'll have a coffee. What could go wrong?" And I said, "You can do that, but nothing's going to happen." However, Mark is very persuasive, and he's worked with people who are non-actors. He's worked with a lot of children, and he was able to convince him that he'd be in good hands. And I'm so glad that he did.
And he was. He's so good in it.
I really am glad.
Fredrik, the industry is in disarray. I mean, if you read the trades, Hollywood is burning, and there's a lot of things happening, layoffs and things that are... What worries you in productions going forward as a producer?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that there is a discussion or a question both here in Europe and also in America, if the adult audience that we are aiming to with this film, if they're really ready to go back to the theaters. We were producing this film during the height of the pandemic, but we still decided to set it up as a theatrical film. That was something we decided in February when we sold it to Sony. And still in America, I would say that adult audiences aren't really back in theaters, but I also think that there could be that the industry doesn't really provide interesting content for them. So it's kind of a bad spiral. So I think that's a worry, but I also feel confident that we're giving them a very heartfelt and life-affirming film, and hopefully they will get to the theater.
As we've been able to screen it and screen it in movie theaters with people, it's exactly what Fredrik and I, our intention was always to have it be a theatrical release, never to be a streamer, because I'm totally moved, and it's such a wonderful experience to see people again having a communal experience of watching a movie. Because you can watch things at home, and that's great, but when you feel that there's a theater full of people that are responding, that's why we go to the movies, and it's one of our greatest exports as Americans. Mm-hmm.
Finally, what kind of neighbors are you and Tom?
I think we're pretty good neighbors. Mm-hmm. And we have a new neighbor. And the night we were flying to come here, he called and invited us. He said, "I know it's very, very last minute, but my family's coming over. We've just put up the tree. Do you want to stop by for a bite to eat?" And I said, "We're leaving in 90 minutes, but I think we could do it." So we went over. But I did have a bad neighbor once. I had a bad neighbor.
And Uwe?
And
Otto?
It was a female Otto, and it was a Brit Marie. This woman had a parrot, and I was nursing a newborn at the time, Truman, and our houses were very, very close together. And so every day I'd be trying to sleep when he had a nap, and I'd hear this, "Wah! Wah!" You know, constantly. And so I very politely said to her, "Do you mind if during this time when my baby is sleeping and I'm trying to take a nap that you could put your parrot inside?" And she said, "Oh, I'm sorry. No, I can't do that. That's the parrot's time to be outside." I was like, okay, just earplugs, go back.
Fredrik, ordförande för Bostadsrättsföreningen.
No, I think I can work to become a better neighbor, but I have become a better neighbor. You know, I heard something in a podcast that I thought was really interesting, that in disasters, when you have earthquakes or natural disasters, the people that survive are not the one who has prepared or, you know, stored food, but are the ones who are good neighbors. because they help each other, and when disaster strikes, there is a community.
Yeah.
I thought that was really something that I took to heart, so I think we can all improve on that.
Thank you so much. Let's bring your
Thank
boys
you,
in.
Christine.
Thank you, and good luck with
Thank
the
you.
Film.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, are we ready? Thank you, Rita. Without further ado, they have Oscars and Swedish Film Awards between them, and Forrest Gump and Wallander and Otto and Uwe and everything. Welcome to the stage, Tom Hanks and Rolf Lassgård.
Hi, can I see here? Hello. Look at you down there, front row. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Hello, boys. So while we were working, were you talking hockey?
No, we were talking Falstaff.
Yeah.
We're comparing all the roles we played, and we both played Falstaff at some point. How about that?
Two roles.
Okay. Well, because I was thinking, I've seen you in your Pittsburgh Penguins.
Oh, okay.
And do you know that Rolf is...
Hockey, What is your team?
Yeah. It's called Brynäs. You know Börje Salming that so sadly passed away from Toronto Maple Leafs?
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, he was in my team a couple of years ago.
Do you know
ago.
That Rolf was like you? I mean, how good were you? You were like almost...
When I reached the guys and get them into the wall, it was okay. But I was pretty slow.
I could have been really a great hockey player, mm-hmm. and I showed great promise, but I could never learn how to skate.
Well, you need that.
It like took me out of the game, but I think I could have been a good one. I think.
So, Rolf, we're on pins and needles, everyone here. How did this guy do? How was he?
In Uwe, fantastic, yeah. of course.
Right, okay.
I'm such a
newcomer.
Great big fan. I mean, this meeting is so fantastic. I mean, the telling was that we should let Otto and Uwe meet, and I'm so glad that we made it out of character.
Yeah.
Although I think they would have gotten along. Oh,
no,
you know?
Yeah.
I think if Otto and Uwe would have just said, how stupid are your neighbors? My neighbors are so stupid. Mine are stupid too.
Yeah.
You know, we would have gotten along great.
Yeah, but then it starts with mine are stupid than mine.
Yeah.
I know that this is, of course, a private thing, but I know that you wrote Rolf a letter. Is there anything you can tell us about what was in that?
Well, look, I felt as though I was writing the first actor who ever played Hamlet, and now I'm playing Hamlet as well. I just, you know, when we saw it for the first time, I am a selfish, competitive actor.
And everybody.
This guy had this fabulous role, and he was killing it, and he was crushing it. And I'm in the audience thinking, like, how come I don't? This is really a good role. And I don't speak Swedish. That's the only thing that is in the way of me being able to do it. But I just wanted, even if we had never met, we would share this thing between us for the rest of our days. And there would be just enough differences, and there'll be just enough similarities. You know, Sweden is not America, vice versa. And I think I probably yell a lot more than Uwe does, you know, because Americans yell a lot. But I just wanted to be able to touch base and say, I am surfing behind you. I'm on the next wave. You were out in front of me, and I just want to live up to it as much as possible. But I was a fan letter. It was a fan letter to Rolf.
And did you answer?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was so surprised and so honored of this generosity. I mean, the first letter I got from a colleague is from Tom Hanks. I mean,
that's not bad.
It is so nice.
I got you. I got his email address from Frederick, and I said to you, "Oh yes, I think you would very much like enjoy to get the letter from you." And I said, "Well, can you? Yes, I will get you the email." I had to ask him like four times. "Oh yes, I'm sorry. I meant to give you that email address. I will get it to you." So finally,
and I
had
to say, and this I learned afterwards that because it's such a beautiful letter in brown paper, and it's typed. on a real typing machine. And somebody then told me, you are a collector.
I collect typewriters.
It was so beautiful.
Would you like one? I have way too many. Send it along.
I have the app.
I don't need to die with 180 typewriters. I don't want
to
burden
die with something.
I don't want to burden my kids with those.
Rolf, you regarding your process, you have talked about that when you are preparing for a role, you pack a backpack for the character.
Oh, what a great idea.
See?
Yeah.
I am so going to steal that. Oh, and I'm not going to credit you at all.
Yeah.
I'll say things like, no, I heard an actor. Yeah. I can't remember
his name.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
But I want to know what was in Uwe's backpack.
Yeah, it was some movements. It was some lines. The book was with me. The thing is, when you start a shoot, when you come from the theater, it's of course you have 7 or 8 weeks of rehearsals. When you start to shoot, you start to shoot. Therefore, I like this with the backpack because hopefully you got the right things with you. You don't know because it's like a trip that grows every day.
What is your first day of shooting on a movie? Very first
that
day. What is that like for you?
If I could decide, like you did in Uwe, I did, the first day was to shuffle a little bit snow. Move, don't say too much, walk around. I think it's my
dream. What was our first day? Do you remember? Hey. That's right.
Yeah.
So I had a ton of dialogue. And everybody is sure we're going to be fired at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And no matter how many times you've gone over it, you think, did I say that right? What is it again? When do I say this? I felt like an idiot. Yeah. And you, between the backpack and just shoveling on your first day, I'm stealing all of this. I'm going to go next time. I say, I'm not shooting that on the first day.
Yeah.
I'm going to get in and out of a car on the first day.
Yeah.
That's all I'm doing.
But then that maybe explains, because your first day is in the movie. My first day is not in the movie.
That's another thing they can always do.
Part of creating the character was some Oscar-nominated prosthetics.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah. Order. Of course. When I meet the makeup designers, they told me we have to get rid of this.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, cut.
Oh, come on, it wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on cannedairpodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.
Take it away. And I saw a computer built to a picture, and I said, this is it. That, I have to do it. So we tried it first, and I felt immediately, this is the guy. And it forced me. A mask, I heard a film critic once said, is it too cheap to have a mask? And I feel that it is absolutely sometimes the opposite, because it forces you to change your body, your movements, that it go together with your face. So that was also an experience from the first shooting day, because there was snow in the small houses, and I went out for the first day in my mask. And the guys who was working, hey, you can't be here. Go away. So I was forced out from the set.
So movies are all the same. You know, before we started shooting, Rita was actually watching it because we were comparing palettes and things like that from the colors, literally the cinematographer. And she said, do you want to watch this? I said, I do want to watch it, but I don't want to hear it. So we turned the sound down. So I just watched your face and your body and your motions like that. So I was only watching the physicality of it, because I didn't want to have to read the subtitles in order to get it. I just wanted to see how you carried yourself and all of that, because he's a big intimidating guy. But along with that, there comes this. There was a stoic. Do you have the word stoicism? To a surety, you know, he's a very self-assured man. Uwe was. And so I wanted to pick up that scary visage of yours, you know, the way your hawk-like face was concentrating on people, because I think we screamed a lot more. Yeah. You know,
things in your auto backpack. You made some other choices in terms
for example, the hair, and I have worked with our hair people, with Hot Pants Tony. Tony, that was I'd worked with him before. He's a great guy from New Orleans. Well, I just got to tell you, I'm just so hot, I just wish I could wear hot pants to work. I'm going to call you Hot Pants Tony. We were talking about the hair, and it's funny. As soon as you start, you have a logical explanation for everything. And so with the hair, I said, Otto gets his hair cut from the same exact barber. It costs $20, and he gives a $2 tip, and that is what he's been doing for the last 17 years. So it's not a great haircut. You know, what's a good price for a Swedish haircut? How many kroner would that be? You know, the cheap supercuts, you know, the cheapest haircut barber that you could have. That's where Otto goes. And when it came down to the clothes, I was talking with Frank, our costume designer, who brought it all together. I said, "Look, I make everything at least one size too large, if not two sizes, because I think when he was married, he ate very well and he ate regularly. And as a single man, a widower, he does not eat nearly. He doesn't have the appetite and he doesn't have the time for it. So he lost 30 or 40 pounds. I mean, so if you look at it, all of his clothes are really quite hanging off of him. But that's where you end up. No one can answer that question except for you, and you have those answers for everything."
But you've had some in your career, some big transformations. I'm thinking about Castaway and Colonel Parker now, where you've really, I know for Castaway, you gained 50 pounds and then lost 50 pounds. I mean, is that something, how different is that? How do you work with that?
It can kill you if you try to do it too often. You know, I'm going to gain 50 pounds and then I'm going to lose. No, you can't do that. There was malleable. I mean, we literally, the first half of Castaway, I literally ate everything I could. It was very unhealthy. And then we took a year to lose all the weight. And then we went back and shot the second half of the movie. Financially, no studio wants to do that anymore. You know, they don't want to carry the cash flow. And Colonel Tom Parker, well, that was prosthetics, you know, and it was first class, award winning all the way. And you're right, what it does, it alters your center of gravity. You walk differently, you sit differently. You cannot be comfortable at all at any time during the day. But it ends up being a bit of a suit of armor, you know. It ends you come into work every day, and literally the character is layered upon you, and you cannot be yourself. You end up becoming a different human being.
Rolf, I understand you took some inspiration from military when Uwe's doing his rounds.
Yeah, we started with this round to walk, and I was thinking, in one way, of course, he has his sickness and so on, but it's like an old man walking with his dog every day. He gets his exercise every day in the morning. When I did the military, we had these guys who was walking around in the evenings, though, looking that everything was calm and everything should be like it is, you know. So, a little bit. I thought also, because this mask also made me look a little bit too old, in one way. I wanted to that he was some kind of in the bodies, so
still fit
mm-hmm. as I can be fit. You have to give me some diet, some.
It's called self-loathing. You know, develop some real, you know, some some real narcissistic self-loathing. I think that's the best way to lose weight, you know, don't you think?
Good to know.
Work on it, you know.
Tom, you have the most iconic eye roll I think I have seen in a movie. That yeah. You know that's going to be a meme for the rest of 2023.
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah.
I don't know if they can see you, but can you?
Yeah.
That's the way I live my life sometimes. I picked it up from most of all four of my kids because that's all they give me.
Oh, I know that,
yeah. Hey, can you guys? What is the password for Netflix? Oh, Jews did. I can never remember that.
How are you? I mean, is there an Uwe? What pisses you off in day to day life?
Oh dear.
Yeah.
All right.
We have time.
Okay. We had to come up. You had a great routine, your morning routine. Uwe did.
Yeah.
You had many things you needed to check because of the nature of the complex that you lived in. We needed to. There was a gate you could check, and there's of course the can. Who puts the cans with the bottles? Who can't put them? What? How is this difficult? They're different colors. The different color bins, and the cans go here. Who can't do this right? And if there's Otto a little bit right there. But we also, they said, well, what about the parking permits? And so even though Otto recognizes the car, it's always the same car. He still has to check to make sure that, okay, that's hanging there. All right. Wait a minute. It's not. He would literally go up and say, look, I know you live here. I know that's your car, but you need to have your parking permit hanging from the mirror. Otherwise, I'm going to call the cop. So my problem is driving. In Los Angeles particularly, if a car in front of me starts slowing down for no reason and goes even slower and making me slow down too, and then stops, almost comes to a stop and then slowly makes a right turn without using a right turn blinker, you do not want to be in the car with me. I go off on a jag of swearing and salty language that, you know, and there's other reasons, anytime in an automobile. Well, thank you very much for the use of your turn signal because it's just so great for me to know which way you're going because you know which way you're going and I don't. Thank you. What a...
Honey, wasn't that Tom Hanks?
Yeah, it was. Who was that guy I saw screaming in that old car driving by right
there? Rolf, what pisses you off? No. Not much.
I love it. You say, what pisses you off?
Yeah, that's very nice. I mean, it was a very good routine for me when we started to shoot every shooting morning because I had to get up 4:15 in the morning. And I had a 3 minutes walk to the makeup. Everybody was living in small houses. And I saw everybody was sleeping. I know that the director he's sleeping at least 1.5 hour more. So not to stand outside and scream and try to wake up. I had to go up every morning. Everybody's sleeping. I made small films during my walk to the makeup department. You know, this male kicking everywhere. You have to check with your foot on flat tires. And I made a small movie that I sent to him some mornings. That his main character was really working. But maybe what pisses me off is when I'm trying to do something practical and somebody tells me how it should be done.
Hey, you know, you're not doing that right.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
really?
No,
I'm not doing this right?
Yes.
Really? I'm not doing this. Why don't you come show me how to do it? Thank you very much. Like in the gym? Like if you go to the gym?
Yeah.
You know, you really should keep your shoulders back. Why don't you shut up? That gets me. Get worked up a little bit.
Tom, do you know what the word folkskär is?
No, but please tell me so I can steal it and use
well,
it
it's,
at home.
Well, it's you, both of you. I mean, it basically means that you're really beloved, that you're beloved through a big,
so
broad audience.
Being so cranky, I love that.
What's like when you and Rita got COVID in the beginning of when we were all freaking out and you were tweeting.
You're welcome.
You were, yes.
And you're quite welcome.
You were tweeting dad jokes and just making us all feel better. That's folkskär.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Celebrity canaries in the coal mine. Yeah. That's sort of like what we
But
were.
I was wondering if it's been a hindrance. Rolf, you said that for a while in Sweden when you got really big, that they were seeing you in certain roles. And like in Denmark, they were offering you other things. Talk a little bit about what that...
It's very easy that you. It was mostly in the beginning, I think. I played a lot of policemen. I mean, always a policeman, and you get into that box in one way. And but the only way you can do it is to keep on working. Because this was different characters, and they were very popular in Sweden. But then it comes to something positive, because they were different, and I tried to play them different, and that made me to go to other kinds of roles. But still, you can see I've always been the good guy, even. With a big heart, yeah.
And Tom, I mean, is it true that like Zemeckis, when you were doing the Vietnam scenes in Gump and in Spielberg and Ryan, that there was discussions like we don't want to see Tom Hanks shooting?
Oh yeah, and it drove me nuts. Mm-hmm. Let me get this straight: we're going to bring all these helicopters and all these guys and all these explosions going on. And you don't want Tom to shoot a gun because he's such a nice guy. And why would he? Why we don't want you to kill Nazis? And I said, listen, I'm going to tell you right now: I didn't take this job to not kill Nazis. I have a machine gun, and when I see him, I'm going to shoot. As simple as that. You can keep it or not, but I'm not going to say, oh no, I'm too nice. It's funny because in all of the discussions of that, the Vietnam sequence. Understand, Vietnam was a breaking point in the United States of America. That was when I was growing up. I was in junior high and high school, and Vietnam divided America more or less straight down the middle. Of people who accepted the need for going to war in Vietnam, and the other half of the country was saying, why in the world are we going to Vietnam in order to fight this war over what, this tiny sliver of a country? And to go and do that, we were talking about how Forrest is really good at doing one specific, he's the best at doing one specific thing, which is what he is told to do. So I said, "What? When that ambush goes on, he's going to hit the ground and he's going to fire his full magazine in the fields of fire in order to guarantee that he can either pull back or whatever it is." And Bob said, "All right, go ahead and do it." So I wasn't about to not fire my weapon if I was going to be in Vietnam.
Rolf, is there a villain that you would like to play if you're only playing?
I'm not longing after to play a villain. I mean, I like even if people could act bad, there is a light in the heart in every human being. So I'm satisfied with that.
I'd like to play a cop in Denmark.
Well, he has contacts,
thing, right?
Yeah.
But what is the deal with that? Not to sound like Jerry Seinfeld, but Sweden and all these cops and detectives and.
I think about very good novels. It started there. Very good novels. It started there.
That's one of the things you do, Rolf. You really go back to the novel, I understand, when you're creating a character. Yeah. Both Wallander, that you went back to, and Uwe. What do you find in them?
I mean, some actors say there's a novel, and then we write a script, and then this novel is going to be a film, and you don't use the novel because it could disturb you. For me it is like it's the raw material that you can use. I mean, small lines, small thinking, small physical movements. Like I wrote you, when Uwe pointed at somebody, it's like a policeman that holding a flashlight.
Yes, that's right.
How do we do that?
Right.
But it's very good, inspiration.
Yeah, I use the two. I use the two fingers
in,
as well.
In the car.
Yeah. I hope that. Oh, I hope I pulled the finger up there. Stole it from there.
Did you go back to the book?
Oh, constantly. Yeah. I will try to get material wherever I can. I had a director when I was 19, and he yelled at the entire cast of this one play. Because everybody got drunk the night before for the opening night, and it was rotating repertory, so we had to show up fresh and rehearse another play, and everybody was listless. And he yelled at us all, and he said, look, your job as actors, I can't do this by myself. Your job is to show up on time, to know the text, and have an idea. And that I remember that that idea is a thing you keep in your pocket. And you can, wherever you can get that idea of something to do, and the information that a novel will tell you is never going to come out in the text of what you're, of this, what the screenwriter writes. But if you know that that's part of the logic of the character, that only the really the actor is the one that has to protect that, because the director will say, "Oh, I need this shot, and you got to do this," and I said, "Well, let me give me a second in order to wrap my head around that," because any particularly the Frederick Bachman novel. There is so much in there that plays out in behind Otto's eyes and Ova's eyes that you can't get anywhere else, and it's there. So why wouldn't you go? Why wouldn't you go pick that cotton?
The '90s weren't good for everyone, but they were good for you guys. I have to say, there's few actors that I've researched that, I mean, you're both of your careers had blasted off at this point.
We
you
are
had
the same age.
You are the same age.
More or less born the
A
same
League
age.
Of Their Own. You had back all the Sleepless, you know, all the wonderful rom-coms. You had back-to-back Oscars with Philadelphia and Forrest Gump. You had your Guldbagge for Minstora Tjocke Far, the Beck movies, the Wallander. When did you, either of you, realize, oof, I'm a thing now?
A thing.
Explain that, Tom.
Don't you like, as soon as you get some sort of accolades, you think, all right, that's it.
Exactly.
I peaked. It's all downhill from now. All I'm going to do is that again. It's always constant struggle. I will say there's a moment where you realize you can get your car fixed. You know, you have the money, you know, if you drop the transmission, I'm rich, I can get my car fixed now. You know, if something goes wrong, I can afford cheap Chinese food twice a week, and, you know, if I still smoked, I could pour a carton of cigarettes anytime I want to. I don't smoke anymore, but that's a sign of being well off, wealthy, yeah.
And you Rolf, do you remember a moment?
No, I mean, I think... To be the thing in Sweden and to be the thing in the United States, you're two different things.
You're a thing here. But how are you with fame? I mean, that must have come crashing down. Was that difficult? Was it?
Well, there's no training for it, you know? But I get it, you know? I remember seeing a famous movie star, Robert Stack. I don't know if you know who Robert Stack is. Robert Stack was on a TV show called The Untouchables. He's a very... Any American who saw a picture of Robert Stack, you'd say, oh, that's Robert Stack. I saw him once in Baggage Claim at LAX. And it was like, dude, there's Robert Stack! And so I recognize that. That goes with the territory. I was sort of fortunate that I was on television, was sort of recognizable, and just sort of like grew. And you just have to understand that it's important, and it's a bit of a commodity. And you can't... Sometimes you do find yourself that you are to somebody who is maybe meeting you for the first time on a bad day. You might come off to that person as the biggest fucking asshole of all time.
Yeah.
Pardon my language, but
it's okay.
Because if they're catching you at a bad time, you know, your kid's sick, you're trying to buy shoes, you're running out of money for the parking meter, and you're late for something, and someone makes a big deal, you don't have time for them, then maybe you feel bad after that. But it's the territory, and it's important, and it's a thing, and You want to give everybody in the theater, you know, the benefit of the doubt.
And you also get to host SNL marvelously, as you have done so many
times. You know who SNL is here in the
Yes,
in Sweden?
We know what SNL.
Okay, yeah. That's a good gig. Man.
That's a good gig.
That's a fun gig.
Rolf, you have gone back to characters many times. You've played them, Wallander, several times. Has that been something you've enjoyed? doing
it. Yeah, really, because, I mean, when this serial industry started just a couple of years ago, I was not so much in it because I have the privilege to work with authors that was starting to write a book, and then it took a couple of years, and then a new book, and you made the film. So time went by. So I mean, to do one film and then wait 16 years to do the next ones. That's really interesting.
Yes.
Because I mean, what have you been doing all this time? I mean,
well, at least they didn't say, get me a young
Lothgar. Exactly.
You know, you want them to go off and get Lothgar. You don't want them to get the next one.
Do you have a Truman who can play the young Lothgar?
<Yes. laughs>
And but you haven't done that all this much. We don't have a sequel of Grandpa Gump or anything like that coming.
Well, I did the Robert Langdon movies, which mm-hmm. I like to call the Da Vinci Code movies. We did those, but even those were spread out, you know, many years. And that was really more about plot, because the character didn't necessarily age or change very much. And
But you have returned to directors.
Pardon me?
Directors you've worked with many times.
Yeah, I go back to them. Have you worked with the same directors many times? Because don't have to get to know them. You end up speaking a coded language already. And if you've had a good experience, you can just pick up right where you left off and continue along. You move faster.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to Uwe. I think we only have a few minutes left, and Otto, of course. How do you hope that Otto will resonate now when you're letting him out into the world?
Well, the United States, I think there is a default cynicism that by and large is sort of like the natural order of things for when somebody moves into your neighborhood. You're almost suspicious of who that is. Who is that? Who's moving in across the street? Are they good for the neighborhood or not? What are they going to do to my property values? Oh, it's a family of Mexicans. This is not going to be good for my property values. They're loud. They speak a different language. The kids are going to drive. They're going to leave their toys all over the front yard. This is a disaster. If a movie can make understanding and being open and acceptance somehow glamorous enough to make you as an audience member want to be the same way, I think movies can do that. I think cinema can do that. To say that, you know what, there is nothing to be afraid of by these new people that are moving. And maybe just the opposite happens. What I was knocked out by, certainly the novel and what Rolf did in the original film, was starting at a place of loneliness and being alone. And the last thing Uwe and Otto wanted to hear was, you know, a knock on the front door. Leave me alone, leave me alone. Yeah. I'm all done, I'm all finished. I don't need anything from anybody. But that introduction that comes from new people that not only ask for favors that you don't want to give, but they also come and they ask you, are you okay? Do you need anything? That's the opposite of being lonely. That's the opposite of being close. It's the opposite of cynicism. It is, in fact, it's an embracing of the possibility of my life is going to be made larger by knowing these people. And if I go out of my way to ignore them, then that's actually a bit of a tragedy. And I think movies can present that as, hey, just remember, what is it Frederick said? No one is a stranger once you know their story. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is be willing to listen to that story. And guess what? You end up having something in common.
Yeah. Let's hope people want to listen.
I mean, that's a beautiful thing about story. Because in the real life, all these Ottos and Uwes, we just judge them and leave them alone. But in the world of cinema, it's so very nice. Because when they go into their houses, in the real life, we don't know anything. But in cinema, we suddenly follow them inside the house and see what it's like a small Chinese box that you see one side of a person and then you see a complete different side of a person.
Finally, I have to ask you what I asked Rita and Frederick. How are you as neighbors?
Hey, Mr. Happy Swede. Tell them.
Do you have neighbors?
Tell them how you treat your neighbors first. By the way, do all Swedes live 45 minutes outside of Stockholm? I have yet to meet anybody who lives in Stockholm. Where do you live? Oh,
you
I live about 45 minutes down the archipelago. It's a very lovely house. We come in, of course, to do the work, and sometimes I drive, and sometimes I take the ferry, but by and large, I cannot live in Stockholm. I live about 45 minutes outside on the, the archipelago. So what's your neighborhood like 45 minutes outside of the archipelago?
It's actually 5 hours. So. No, but I think I'm rather okay neighbor. I mean, we have this, and that is nice in your movie. It's still there, you know. We don't open the doors directly for strangers and the Scandinavian way. Stand in the door for a while and show me how you which person you are, then we can let you in.
There you go,
Tom.
we are exactly the same.
That's true.
We have this because Los Angeles is my wife was born in Los Angeles. Her brother lives in the same house that she was brought home from the hospital in. So this is her hometown. She knows all the shortcuts. But if you're not, it's not your hometown. LA is a place you came to and made your peace with. You know, it's a big town. So we sort of have this rule. I do too. There's three ways you can see your neighbors. The first one is, you know, you're pulling in. Hey, how are you? You know, that's all you're getting from me. Just kind of, yeah, I know, I see you. You live there. I get it. You know, get that. Then there's the other, which is, hey, how are you? Mm-hmm. Now, bad neighbors think that, hey, how are you, is an excuse to come over and start talking to you. It is not. No, it is like, hey, how are you?
Invitation.
Stay right there. Hey, how are you? No, stay right there. No, you stay there. Then the last thing is like, this is what is required. Get over here. Yeah. That's the good neighbor. But you don't give that away on the first time you meet them.
No.
You stand in the doorway for a while and, like check them out. So that's and also in Los Angeles, every other house is being rebuilt. So you actually know the construction crews better than the neighbors. And every time you drive past them, what, another 2 weeks, guys? Another 2 weeks and you'll be done? 2 weeks, right? Okay, great. When do the cement mixers come? 2 weeks from now. That's the way that always works.
Guys, I want to thank you both for your incredible body of work that's really been part of our shared movie history. And I hope and I see Otto going just exploding all over the world. And thank you so much for taking the time.
This man made it happen.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was my honor.
A conversation as opposed to a series of...
Thank you. Tack snälla.
Thank you, everybody. Lovely theater, by the way. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Neglia, and I am the host of the Next Best Picture podcast, part of the Film Entertainment Awards website, nextbestpicture.com. On our show, we explore all year long what is possibly going to win Best Picture at the Oscars. We do this by conducting interviews with people within the film industry, holding weekly reviews of the latest theatrical releases, and on our main show, where we dive into various different topics, answer your fan questions, and also do our best to explore Oscar history's past in hopes that it will tell us something new for this upcoming award season race. We hope that you will join us on all of the various podcasting networks. We look forward to seeing you over at nextbestpicture.com.